Welcome to the GPP podcast for budding politicos, policy wonks, and change agents. I'm Susan Craig. As an advisor and professor at Washington University who leads the government, policy, and social impact career community, I walk alongside burgeoning policy wonks, politicos, and change agents as they chart their paths to change the world. This podcast is for you if you're interested in hearing tips and techniques that will position you to find your place in the fast-moving, mission-driven world of politics, policy, and advocacy. Now, you may be wondering, where's Amy? My usual co-host is not with me today, but instead, I've got a special guest. Amer Ersani is a fellow career coach in the government and policy community, and he's our lead pre-law advisor. So I've invited him to join us today to share his most frequently asked questions around the law school discernment process. Welcome, Amer.
Thanks for having me, Susan. I'm excited to be here. Deciding whether or not to go to law school is challenging, so I'm happy to share some tips that I find to be most helpful for students.
That's great. I find there are a lot of students that I like to call law school curious. It seems like it's a familiar path. And for many in the government and advocacy space, it seems like a credential that would be useful, right, for them to affect change in a systemic way. I like to remind them that you really only need the degree if you're going to be a lawyer.
Yeah, Susan, that's true, which is why we often advise students to take some time off to work or to do a fellowship or to research after graduation to get into a space that really intrigues them, excites them, and maybe get around some lawyers and see how their work differs from others in the office. This will also make them a better applicant in the long run, as they'll have some real life work experiences to draw from and maybe even write in their personal statements.
Ooh, personal statements. Those are a big part of the application, right? Tell us more.
Yeah. So personal statements are incredibly important in the law school application. In addition to, of course, your LSAT score, your transcripts that you'll have to turn in, a resume, and some letters of recommendation.
Okay, so we'll do all of that. Let's dive into all of those and let's start with that personal statement.
Yeah, I think that's a great place to start. The personal statement is meant to demonstrate your why to the school. Why do you want to be a lawyer? It's hard to write in a compelling way if you're very unsure whether or not you want to pursue this profession. So it's important to be sure. There's actually been some changes to the application process due to the recent Supreme Court ruling. There used to be an option to write a diversity statement as well, but that's changing. So that aspect of your writing, which I think is incredibly important, should either be a part of your personal statement or other supplemental writing statement. Some schools have a workaround to make sure that your voice and your background is heard and expressed. And you want to make sure your perspective is shared and make sure it brings that added value to the school's next cohort.
So they're still looking for that information, even if it's not like in the diversity statement per se, it sounds like.
Yeah, they're still looking for that information.
Okay. So what's your advice on how to write a good personal statement that reflects those things?
My advice is to start as early as you possibly can and get as much feedback from multiple people. The Writing Center, of course, is always going to be a great place for our students to start. But also, we have a whole team of pre-law advisors on campus that know what they're talking about. I've read a lot of personal statements, including me. So probably the first thing to do is to visit the pre-law advising website and sign up to get their weekly newsletter. Maybe eventually schedule an appointment with one of us.
Okay. We'll include a link to that in our show notes. That newsletter is really helpful to just let you know about the upcoming LSAT dates and let you know when law schools are coming to campus. Lots of other great advice. I've said the word LSAT again. Let's go there.
Yeah. So the law school admissions test, LSAT, is a big part of the application process. It's one of the most important indicators that law schools look at. And there is a lot of anxiety around getting a good score. I think it does really play a big role in the selection process, at least for now.
Okay. So you said a good score. What does that mean? Or I mean, I guess maybe better. The better question is, how should students think about approaching the LSAT?
Yeah, Susan, I have this conversation a lot with students. And, you know, we'll start with, you know, a perfect score on the LSAT is a 180. And that's incredibly difficult to achieve. You know, it's not something that, you know, we set off to achieve. Scores in the upper 160s and above are considered competitive for top schools. However, there's a lot of factors to consider when you're applying to law school. Law schools do consider an applicant holistically. And not everyone wants to go to the top 14 schools. which are also called T14s. So as you're making your list of law schools, I tell students to look at the LSAT data that the schools provide to see the average score of a student who is attending that school. Use data to inform your decision making. So the main crux of this is you need to study pretty hard for the LSAT. You need to take it seriously. You need to schedule time for it. Hopefully you don't have to take it again, but you can if you need to take it again.
So if you do take it again, do schools see that you've taken it again, or do they see different scores, or do you just submit the one that you like the most? How does that work?
Yeah. So for law schools, all of your scores within a 5-year period are reported to that school, the schools you're applying to. So yeah, they're going to see that in that period of 5 years. So maybe you apply 10 years later, who knows? Everyone has a different journey. So unless you cancel the score, they're going to see it. And there's a whole process around canceling scores, score preview. I just recommend that you read that information through LSAC, which is a really good website where you sign up for the LSAT.
Okay. I know I've advised students who have taken it more than once and not done dramatically better. And I think in some cases they have even done worse. So do you advise students to take it again? Do you advise them to not take it again? What do you think is the best approach?
You know, ideally, I hope that we take it once and we're done and we get the best score. We've tried our best on it, but it depends on the student and the situation. It's important to remember that there are trade-offs for devoting so much time and energy to the LSAT.
Yeah. It's a lot.
You're taking it multiple times, sometimes two, maybe even three. Your score typically doesn't change too much when you're taking it unless something has happened during your first exam. I think that sometimes that energy might be better directed towards a personal statement, getting to know the various schools that you're applying to, what they have to offer, scholarship applications. But, you know, once again, I think it's very, very situationally dependent. Talk to one of us. Let's maybe talk about that in detail.
Yeah, that's great advice. I do think students tend to, it's something they know how to do, right? Take a test. Yeah. So it seems familiar and it seems like you can just keep doing it and do better. Yeah. Okay,
so it's a standardized test.
Right. So let's move away from the standardized test and let's talk about just the school selection process. How should students look at law schools? What sorts of things should they be thinking about in their calculus?
Yeah. So fortunately, unlike other graduate programs, law schools tend to have some similarities. They all prepare you to hopefully pass and take the bar exam. At least for now, you know, law schools are changing too. I think graduate school in general is changing, but that can help you start with some side-by-side comparison. I always talk about location. Location's incredibly important. I think most law schools that students apply to at WashU tend to place nationally, but there are some schools that students want to go to be near family, to be near friends, to be near a geographical location that they would like to see themselves.
I guess that makes sense too for the bar exam purposes, right? Like if you're in a location that where you're going to be taking the bar, it kind of gives you a leg up.
Yeah. Yeah. I just recently talked to an alum who's like, I'm a New York City native. I went to school at WashU, but I've been in New York City pretty much all the other times in my life. So I'm only going to apply to New York City schools and nearby. And I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I think a good way for our students in GPSI to think about this is, why don't you take a look at some of the law clinics that the school is running? Because those are pretty unique to the law schools. Here at WashU, for example, we have an incredible environmental law clinic that students really, really love.
Yeah. Also a great place to get involved as an undergrad, right? They have opportunities there.
Yeah. It's a great way to get involved.
Okay, so what does the timeline look like? When should students be taking the LSAT, doing all this research? When should they be getting those letters of recommendation that you mentioned?
So unlike some of your friends who are in specific fields, maybe going to medicine or business, there actually isn't a specific timeline for you to follow. And especially if you're taking some time off, we really advise you to take that time off to work, to go into your professional environment. So technically, if you take some time off, whether that's a year, 2 years, or even beyond, you actually don't need to be doing LSAT prep and getting everything ready during school. I do want to address some of those other questions around letters. So for letters of recommendation, you do need anywhere from 2 to 4 letters of recommendation, and it should be a mix of faculty and those who've supervised you in a professional setting. So those are maybe an internship supervisor, a work supervisor, someone who knows you professionally. And I always say with students, keep track of the work you do inside and outside the classroom. room, because it can help that recommender write you a strong letter. Yeah. You want to have a strong letter. So you got to know what you did during that internship or during that class that you were writing so much, or that thesis you worked on.
Especially if you're going to go back and ask them for that letter, right? Maybe a year or two out, their memory might not be as fresh as you would like it to be.
Yeah, that's a great point, Susan. I actually recommend, if you can, a short meeting, the person who's writing your letter to, you can send an email asking, but to just formally ask in person or virtually or over the phone. I think it's a nice touch. And I say, bring your resume to that meeting. Just give them an overview of the ins and outs of what you did in that class or that professional experience. And by the way, your basic resume is an application component, pretty easy to turn in. Just meet with me. We can chat about that. But it's a nice thing to do as you're thinking about recommendations, to have your resume ready, because you're going to have it ready for law school anyway. And just be aware, some law schools only let you allow 2 letters, but some schools let you turn up to 4. So it really is variable.
I've got a little handout that I often give to students who ask for letters from me, just helping them know what is helpful for me as a recommender. So we can include that in the show notes as well. I think recommenders are all different. They all have different expectations or requirements for you, but it is nice to kind of give them some material to work with, for sure.
Yeah, I love that. And Susan, I feel like I've heard that from a lot of professors on campus, like, let's either chat or have to fill out this form.
Yeah. So I know a lot of students that I've talked to do like to take the LSAT while they're in school, just because, you know, they're students, they're practiced at being students, they're in test taking mode, and it just feels easier to knock it out when you're a student. But it's great to know that there's just a lot of flexibility and there's really no need to get that knocked out or to have it all figured out, right? So, okay, if we're not advising them to focus on the LSAT or all of the personal statement and whatnot right now, what should they be doing? If they are thinking about law school, are there courses they should be taking or extracurriculars that you recommend?
I would say my recommendation, and one of the greatest things about law school and the pre-law space, is you're going to see maybe some stereotypes here, like the history major might be applying a lot, the poli sci major, but there is nothing specific that you need to do. And I want to emphasize that over and over again.
Yeah, that is a great reminder.
This is not a traditional trajectory. You don't need to major in a certain field. You don't need to do certain things. Extracurricular are over your summers. I've met so many creatives and STEM individuals who end up going to law school. They want to build a diverse cohort. So follow your passion. Choose a major that makes you think deeply and write often. Your GPA actually does matter to law school. So don't major in something that is going to tank your GPA. We do have a great legal studies minor at WashU too. So if you don't want to take the minor, they have a great list of courses to refer to.
I love that advice. Think deeply and write often. That's great. I think that's great advice. That really is what law schools are looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So what about outside the classroom? Are there any extracurriculars or internships that you think are most beneficial?
You might be noticing a little bit of a theme here, but do whatever you want. There are some great pre-law groups on campus that you can consider joining. You know, debate, mock trial, that won't hurt in the long run. But I truly think what matters here is that you choose what you're passionate about. Get involved in what you care about, whether it's a certain inequity you want to address or a certain social issue that's important and near and dear to you. I think that's where you should really focus in on, because I think that's where you can make a difference.
Yeah, I agree. That's often what I tell students too. And I think for students who are really questioning whether law school is the right choice for them, I think finding a space where there are both lawyers and not lawyers is also helpful, because they can see how the lawyer's work differs from the others in the office. I know when we visited Arc City Defenders a few years back, we met with a lawyer and a caseworker and an organizer. And then we got to hear from all of them. And while they were all contributing to that mission to support individuals who are marginalized and don't have access to the legal system, the lawyer talked about filing motions and going to court and kind of the slow and adversarial nature of her work. Mm-hmm. And then the others talked about supporting individuals, telling their stories, advocating for resources, just like community organizing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it seemed like that was really helpful for students to see how that every day can vary. And I think some students really resonated with that adversarial, like the court filings and the motions. And then others thought, no, I really want to be involved with people a little bit more. So I think it was insightful for understanding how those 2 paths can differ.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting and great point, and really harkens back to the beginning of the podcast of the space away from school can be an incredibly important time and formative time for you to think about, well, does pursuing my JD even make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I really want to do casework. I don't think I need a JD for this.
Right. Social work, right? Or public policy or even journalism might be a better fit. Or no grad school. That also is an option.
Yeah, no grad school at all. It may not make sense.
Right.
I think the flexibility is our best friend here. And it may seem so odd to you when you're in school and you're comparing yourself to a pre-med student or a business school student. They have a timeline. And I just want you to know that you're not behind. You're not going to set yourself on the wrong foot after graduation. This industry is just different. It's very much so purpose and values driven. And not that the other industries aren't, but there's time and flexibility here for you to figure out what motivates you, what are your values, and as we talked about before, what are some of your issue areas? And think about how that can help you write your application holistically. A strong personal statement, if you worked in a juvenile detention center for 2 years and you're really interested in child welfare now and you're really into this niche area, mm-hmm. I want you to think less about the timeline and more about the journey.
That's great advice, Amber. I guess the other piece of advice that we often give is just to talk to people, right? We find that those who are just a few steps ahead of you can be really helpful in discerning what those values are. They've been in your shoes recently. They maybe have an internship or some coursework under their belt that you're considering. And then they may have identified some helpful resources for you that they'll be willing to share. So start looking at your peers as your network. That's what they are.
The students I've talked to, that's really been a transformative moment for them. And it doesn't have to be people you don't know. It could be family, friends, even could be a recent alum or someone who just started law school. WashU alumni are very generous with their time. And I'm sure they'll be more than happy to talk about their career journey and why they ended up choosing law school. And that could in turn inform your journey. So gathering information, listening to people, and really just grappling with their narrative can help inform yours.
And the good news is, if those conversations sound daunting to you, we do have a podcast on networking that can give you some tips for how to go about doing that. We'll include that in our show notes as well. Amber, any last words of advice for us?
Yeah, Susan, I think my last piece is just reminding students that you're not going anywhere. There are a lot of resources on campus to support you. Here at the Center for Career Engagement, you actually have services forever. So you don't need to worry that you're not going to have access to me and the other pre-law advisors. You know, a few years down the line after you graduate, we're still here. So whether it's my office, Dean Megan Peabody's office, who leads our pre-law advising team, the Writing Center, we're still accessible to you after you graduate. And if you take that gap year, 2 or 3, we're still here to support you. And in fact, most of my pre-law students that I work with are alums.
Yeah, same. That's a great reminder. Amber, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you, Susan.
If you enjoyed this podcast, we encourage you to check out the others that we have. It's our way of offering you some on-demand career advising. And if you've got other topics you want us to cover, let us know. Our newly named Government, Policy, and Social Impact Career Community is growing every day. And to those of you who are new to the space, welcome in. Until next time, keep working to imprint your world.